UK Wine Show, show number 23 for the 3rd of November, The Zork. G'day, and welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 23 for the 3rd of November. This week we're going to be interviewing John Brooks from Zork. Zork is a new type of closure that was developed in Adelaide about 4 years ago, and it's sort of a mixture of a screw cap meets plastic cork. It has some of the advantages of a screw cap, and also some of the advantages of cork as well, and some of the disadvantages. We're going to be talking to John about the Zork, how they came about, what sort of markets the Zork is useful for. For those of you who came down and saw me at the wine show, thanks very much for coming in and meeting me. It was really interesting talking to people who've been listening to the show. And I wanted to find out from everybody how they listen to the show. You know, do they listen to it on an iPod or do they listen to it off the web? What their favorite bits of the show was. It sounds like a lot of you guys are enjoying the news part, so we'll look at maybe beefing that up in the new year. And the interviews seem to be reasonably well enjoyed as well. So since the news is so enjoyable, why don't we listen to the news with Jane Scott?
Thanks, Chris. Nearly 14,000 people attended the wine show held in London last weekend, an increase of 18% more visitors than last year. The show's organisers say the success reflects consumers' increasing interest in wine and confirms the appeal of a dedicated show to promote wine education and knowledge. At the show, there were lots of interactive features where visitors could learn more about wine. The Tasting Theatre ran expert-led tutored sessions with the likes of Oz Clark, Matt Skinner and our very own Chris Scott talking about wine from across the globe. For old world wine lovers, French Wines Experience had a series of lifestyle zones. Each featured wines fit for the occasion, be it nights in, outdoor living, dinner parties or celebrations. Sainsbury's offered us perfectly matched food and wine, which needless to say proved to be exceptionally popular. There were also expert guided wine walks through the show, or if time was tight, visitors to Threshers could take a 10-minute crash course in wine tasting. For some visitors, it was enough just to wander around, tasting some of the 1,500 plus wines that were on offer. Also this week, the first ever Fair Trade wine tasting took place in London. Oz Clark was on hand to talk to visitors at the event, which is hoped will become an annual one. Guy Smith of the Fair Trade Wine Committee told us that the key with fair trade is that it's a guarantee that people aren't being exploited in the production of wine. The idea is that you're not paying more, it's trade, not charity, so everyone in the chain benefits. The retail market for fair trade wine is estimated to be worth £7 million worldwide. That's a massive leap of 220% since fair trade wine was launched 2 years ago. And it seems that shops in the UK are responding. The Co-op, for example, stocked Chilean and South African wine under their Fair Trade own label range and has just started to offer the first Fair Trade wines from Argentina. And finally, a vineyard in Nova Scotia is now marketing its wines from space. The Canadian producer Jost Vineyards has woven the company name and a wine bottle into the vineyards in a crop circle-like incarnation so that it can be seen on Google Earth. This satellite technology is proving to be a useful tool in promoting wine. In fact, there is now a website called Appellation America, which has uploaded satellite maps of some 3,400 wineries. The site is dedicated to raising awareness of the North American wine appellations. Eric Quanstrom, Director of Marketing, reckons that once people have a map in front of them, it's natural to explore and develop an understanding of place. You can check out Jost Vineyards on the site at www.appellationamerica.com, or for the link you can visit 3050.co.uk and go to our news page. Satellite technology is also being used by wine producers to give them more information about what's going on in their vineyards. Graham Beck in South Africa has pioneered the use of satellite mapping to aid planting and irrigation regimes. Called Geographical Information Systems, the mapping gives key vineyard health indicators, including depth, moisture, yield planting and vigour. As a result, the company has a greater understanding of the vineyards, enabling it to make short and long-term quality improvements. And that's all in the news this week. Over to you, Chris.
I hope you enjoyed the news. Fair trade wines, you're starting to see a wee bit of them around now. You know, they're coming in from places like South Africa, Chile, etc. Well, in most countries of wine, I don't think there's that much exploitation. It can make you feel better drinking fair trade products. So, you know, if you can and you find one that you like, it's always good to support those type of products. Do follow the link about the advertisement from space. There is a lovely picture of his vineyard with his advertising plastered all over it. You can see it in Google Earth, actually, and it looks quite good fun. Next, we've got the interview with John Brooks from Zork. Hi, I'm here with John Brooks from Zork. Zork make a new closure that's been going now for, 4 years. How are you, John?
I'm very well, thanks, Chris. Nice to meet you.
It's 4 years you've been going now?
4 years since we started the business. Yeah. And it's been a long story, but you know, now we're in production, we're starting to get some runs on the board, and it's been good fun.
So how did you guys come up with this concept of a Zork?
I met my co-founder, Connor McKenna, about 4.5 years ago now. And he was working in the wine industry, and he was faced with the very start of screw caps coming into the wine industry. And there was a lot of people asking the question of, isn't there another closure beside a screw cap to use? And that's when he had the inspiration one night when he more or less absentmindedly dropped a syringe in the top of a wine bottle after giving his daughter some medicine. And he looked at that and he thought, oh, maybe we can still make a plastic closure here that it gives everything that a screw cap does, but still gives you the pop. You don't lose the pop. And that was sort of the essence of the idea. And I met Connor very soon after that moment and basically took his idea, his inspiration, and turned it into the closure that we have today.
You had a few years of development, I presume?
Yeah, we had a couple of years of developing the closure, obviously raising money to be able to do it. It takes a lot of cash to do this. Yeah. And we've been in production. We sold our first Zorks about 2 years ago, but really only in full sort of in high volume production for just over 12 months.
And you guys are based in Adelaide?
Yep, Adelaide, South Australia, the heart of the wine industry in Australia. If there was ever a new invention to come into the wine industry, it would come out of the heartland of the wine industry, and I guess that's where we've come from. So.
What is the advantage of a Zork over a Stelvin or a Cork?
It really depends what you're looking for in a wine closure. Every closure has a compromise. Nothing is ever going to be everything to everybody. Corks, primarily this closure was developed to solve the problems of cork taint and oxidation in an alternative that wasn't screw cap. Screw cap has always had a perception in the marketplace of cheap wine. It's a good closure. It preserves wine very well. But when you're selling a closure into a marketplace, it's a lot of it's about how people perceive it and how well it's going to be received by people who don't completely understand the technical merits because they've seen it on cheap wine and flagons and other stuff in the past, so they make that immediate association. We felt the wine industry was looking for a unique closure that was designed specifically for the wine industry, specifically for wine drinkers, to address the issues of wine preservation in the bottle, wine consumption, the wine opening experience, and we think that's what we've put together is a unique closure. It preserves a lot of the wine opening experience of a cork. It preserves your wine with the same sort of consistency that a screw cap does.
And the way the Zork works, you've got to sort of peel it off and then open it up, don't you?
Yeah, Zork's made of three parts. It's a plastic cap that snaps over the outside of a standard cork mouth bottle and holds the cap down onto the bottle securely. It has a plunger, which is a bit like a hollow stopper cork, that fits inside the mouth of the bottle. And in between, the important part is an aluminium foil that is welded between the two parts, so it joins all of the three parts together. That foil is the oxygen barrier that prevents oxygen passing through plastic. A lot of people don't realise that it's not just oxygen coming down the side of a cork between the bottle and the glass. It actually transmits through the material, transfuses through the material. Oxygen doesn't pass through foil. It's dense enough to prevent that. And it's that barrier that we have inside the cap that gives us our quality oxygen barrier that we have in our closure. A very consistent barrier, which is important for winemakers, because if you're going to make a bottle of wine, you want to use one closure, you want to know you're going to get the same performance out of the same wine all the time. Yeah. And it's one of the big problems with cork is it's a natural product, natural inconsistencies. Every cork is going to be slightly different.
That foil, which I must admit I hadn't quite realised when I've seen pictures of Zork before. That's the same sort of technology they use in Stelvin to give
it's slightly different material, but they use a metal barrier, and that provides the quality oxygen barrier.
So one of the things that a lot of people don't like about Stelvin is the lack of the pop.
Yep.
Do you want to give us a quick demonstration of how you open one of these new corks?
Sure, not a problem.
So it's very simple. You just grab the tab.
And peel the tab.
Peel the tab off.
Yep.
And then you can pull the closure out easily. And once you've poured yourself a glass of wine, it's very easy to take the closure and push it back into the top of the bottle.
Sealing the bottle. Obviously, if the bottle's too empty, you're not going to keep the wine for too long.
No,
it's more of a convenience reseal. You know, this is one of the compromises of Zork. It's not going to screw on tight like a screw cap does. But most of the time, you open a bottle of wine, you're going to drink it. It's basically you're between pours. So behind a bar in a restaurant, for example, you'd reseal it, put it behind the bar. It keeps the opening of the bottle clean, stops any bugs or spiders crawling in, whatever.
Yeah.
But once you've opened the closure, you've let air into the bottle. There's so much oxygen you've let in there anyway. Your wine is now on the path to oxidation. Yeah. It's really just, you know, keeping it clean and maybe minor spillages or something like that.
You guys published a technical report recently about the closure.
Yeah.
And I had a look at some of the graphs, which are on your website at www.zork.com.au, if anybody wants to have a look at that. It shows the amount of sulfur dioxide, which is used in the winemaking process to stop the wine turn oxidizing. The free sulfur dioxide drops quite a bit initially, whereas in the Stelvin it drops quite gradually in all the other closures. What's causing that?
Our tests show that if you bottle the same wine with the same SO2 levels, the sulfur dioxide, which is a preservative in the wine, is gradually consumed because even Stelvin is not a perfect barrier to oxygen. It has an oxygen transmission level. Mm-hmm. So oxygen will very slowly come in through a Stelvin, and your sulfur dioxide will slowly be consumed over time, but many years.
Yeah.
With Zork, we have an initial drop for the first 30 to 60 days. That's caused by the hollow plunger has air in it.
Yeah.
It's manufactured at atmospheric pressure. About 21% of what's inside that space is oxygen, and that oxygen passes through the end of the plunger and dissolves into the wine and drops your SO2 level. So you get a drop of about 5 or 6 milligrams per litre of sulfur dioxide, and then you see the foil seal kicks in. Sulfur dioxide levels track along the very similar path to what they do with screw cap after that.
That's sort of how the sulfur dioxide gets consumed by the oxygen getting into the wine, really.
That's
determines
right.
The shelf life of the wine itself.
That's right, yeah. That's what defines the shelf life. As you'll see with corks, you know, you can get some good corks that last for a long time if they've been stored well. You can get some bad corks that just randomly oxidise your wine in a number of months.
And I suppose also with corks, if you've got to keep the bottle on the side to keep the cork moist to create that seal. If you keep
a
bottle of wine upright, a normal corked wine upright, it'll dry out, lots of oxygen in, so your wine will get ruined. You don't have that problem with the Zork at all?
No, we don't have that problem with the Zork. And you're right, it's keeping the cork material wet improves its oxygen barrier properties. It also keeps it swollen, so it seals better against the glass. So it's much better to store your cork bottles lying down. Zork is a food-grade polymer that doesn't absorb any moisture. It's not hydroscopic, is the term we use in the industry. So once you put a Zork on, you can stand it up, lay it down, tip it on its side,
do
whatever you like to it. Yeah. It's a really tough closure, and it's really versatile. You don't have to lay your bottles down to let the cork swell.
How does it compare to, say, a plastic cork in terms of how long the wine can stay in the bottle without it oxidising, and also compared to maybe a Stelvin closure?
Obviously, different wines have different levels and they oxidise at different rates because it's not just the sulfur dioxide that causes the oxidation of the wine. And I'm reluctant to sort of speak technically about the performance of other people's closures.
Sure.
But in general terms, you'll find that synthetic closures have a relatively short shelf life, you know, 1 to 2 years, depending on which manufacturer's closure you use. Screw caps have a very long shelf life. You know, there are people drinking bottles of wine that have been down for 30 years under a screw cap, and they're still good, which shows you that they do develop over time, but they develop very slowly. I describe screw cap as like a time capsule for your wine. You pretty much get out of it what you put into the bottle.
Yeah.
Your wines do develop slowly over time, but very slowly. And yeah. And how long do you want to wait for your wine to be at a drinkable level? This is my question.
Yeah. Also, the oxygen level helps the development, isn't it? So Stelvins keep a lot of oxygen out, so it slows the development
down. It slows the development down. That's what extends the shelf life.
And the acid levels as well. The wine, Stelvins quite good at keeping wines quite fresh with crisp acidity.
Yes, it holds the acidity. That's correct.
Whereas you guys, maybe a wee bit less so.
Yeah, because of the more oxidative development process we get out of a Zork, you get different flavours. After about 3 or 4 years, you'll taste a significant difference in the same wine if you had a sort of a comparison benchmark between a Zork and a screw cap bottle of wine. A cork, you'll get a difference, even if it's the same wine, but you'll get a bottle variation from cork to cork, essentially.
Yeah, and 10 bottles, you get three different...
Yeah, that's right. You get 3 or 4 different wines. And that's where the consistency is important. This way we can report the facts of how our closure works, and it's up to the winemaker to decide whether this is what they want for their wine.
What sort of flavour development are you getting compared to, say, a Stelvin or a cork?
In the testing we've done, we didn't benchmark against cork, unfortunately. I wish now that we had. We were benchmarking against screw cap. We're finding that we're getting... We have a chap, Peter Leskey, who's a winemaker at Nepenthe Wines, and he's been essentially translating the technical report stuff into a more sort of industry or layman's terms for me. And he describes it as a more oxidative development. So you get some more honey aromas and flavours coming out in the wine, whereas under screw cap you're getting sharper characters, as you say, more acidity, citrusy type stuff. But unfortunately, they're also picking up more reductive type characters, which is... Flint and rubber. Yeah, where your wine ages in an unoxidated environment.
Yeah.
Whereas our wine is aging in a more oxidative environment, and that's why you're getting a difference.
Okay. And corks age in a more oxidative environment.
Corks age in a much more oxidative environment.
So you would say your product's closer to maybe the way the cork ages? Definitely.
It's taken us sort of really 2 years to get the data on this, but wine under Zork tends to age your wine much more like a good quality, very consistent cork, unlike a screw cap. Your wine will be different, but it's up to the winemaker to choose whether, you know, what they want for their wine.
Sure.
And so that's why we're finding it's, you know, some people are saying, we'll put screw cap on our whites, but we'll put a Zork on our reds because we want a little bit more of that kind of development character in our reds.
Sure.
And it's interesting to see what how people are using our closure in the industry.
How's the closure been accepted? What's your biggest market for the sale of Zork? You said you've been selling it for now for about 2 years?
About 2 years, but really sort of commercially for, you know, 1 to 1.5 years. We were a little late getting started with the whole idea on this, and screw cap has sort of had the jump on us in Australia, and it's really taken off here. That's been good and bad for us. It's been good in the way that it's opened the market, opened people's eyes to alternatives to cork. It's been good that they brought in screw capping equipment and we put a Zork on with modified screw capping equipment.
It keeps
our costs down because our barrier to entries have been lower. So that's all been a real benefit for us. It's also brought this debate about convenience. You know, how do you open a bottle of wine without a corkscrew? You either use a screw cap or a Zork. We found that most of the people in Australia who are picking it up are picking it up to put in their wines to take to markets where screw cap isn't as readily accepted like it is in New Zealand or Australia.
Such as
the US. The US is there at that point where Australia was about 4 or 5 years ago, where screw caps are coming in. They're seeing what it can do to the wines, what it can do to the market. Some people are concerned about it, other people are not. But they're looking at it. They're definitely playing with it, and they're getting definitely more and more accepted into the market. But they also feel that there's no other choice. It's either have a cork or I have a screw cap. Don't I have a choice on this? You know,
yeah.
Isn't there something else? And then when they find Zork, they go, ha, now this is cool. This is different. It doesn't have the perception of baggage that screw cap does, and it's not a cork, and it's specifically designed for wine. You don't see it on any other closure. You don't see it on ketchup or vinegar or olive oil or anything like this, so it doesn't carry that sort of generic perceptions that go with it. It's special. Wine is a special product. and it needs, we believe, a special closure for it. So our two major customers in Australia are putting on all of their export brands, starting to go to the UK. We heard of our first container of product going to the UK the other day, which is fantastic. We've got Don Sebastiani and Sons. They're the 10th largest winery in the US, and they're using it on four or five new brands now that they have that are just starting to hit the shelves out there and getting fantastic response from the market. You know, they launched one brand into California, LBV, California alone, and in the first 6 months it's taken off so well, they're now launching it across the whole country and it's just going gangbusters for them. So they've really seen the marketing advantage of using an innovative closure, consumer-friendly closure.
Any other countries apart from the US?
We're getting a lot of interest in Asia for our customers. Again, we tend to follow our customers. We put it on wine and they take it to other places. Asia has been really receptive. A very similar reason, but probably because there's the perceptions of screw cap in Asia are even sort of worse than they are in the US. It's a fairly new thing for Asians to drink wine. A lot of them in China still mix Coke with their wine. So when they see a bottle with a screw cap on, they immediately have these associations. Oh, we've got sort of some cheap wine. They're trying to push our cheap wine up here. And while Australians and all winemakers are doing it for the right reasons, you have to do things that are ready for the market to accept. So that's why the reception of when they see a Zork on, they go, oh, well, I understand it's not a cork, and they've explained to me why. Okay, I look at this and I see it and I use it and I can peel it off and I can pull it out and I can put it back in. It's so easy, I don't need a corkscrew. Hey, this is really cool, I use it. And it doesn't have the baggage. And we're now finding a lot of our customers are coming to us and saying, hey, my Asian buyers will only take their wine if it has a Zork on it. That's fantastic for us because now the closure is becoming responsible for our customers making sales.
I haven't seen a lot of Zorks in the UK. In fact, I hadn't seen any Zorks in the UK. And I know some screw caps are pretty well accepted there. Have you had much interest from Europe?
We're starting to get some real interest in Europe. We recently just got our order for our first container load of Zorks going to Italy. We've had several people in, small people in France and Germany, taking some small orders and stocking them. We have a distributor in Greece. We have a distributor in the UK who's shipping small amounts around the place. These things take time for people to sort of hear what's about and test them for themselves and get some confidence in the closure. It's one of the difficult things that we've had. You know, someone wants to test a Zork, they put it on a bottle, they put it down for 2 years and they come back in 2 years and say, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And we're only just starting to reach that point in the US with the majors over there where they've just getting through their 2 years worth of testing and now they're starting to come back and talk business to us.
One thing about closures that I never really got my head around was the costings and the different prices. Is it a cheap closure compared to a cork or is it more expensive? How does the whole pricing work?
It's all sort of a mid-range price closure. We target the closure to work on wines that are in Aussie dollars between $10 and $25 range.
Yep.
So they're not your $2 chucks or you know whatever.
So you're looking at £4 to £7.
Yeah, £4 to £7, I guess. In America, it's about from the $8 to $20 range.
Yep.
We know we're not going to be accepted on wines that are much higher than that because they're more traditional. And sort of they expect a traditional closure on them. We're not in a position to price ourselves at synthetic cork levels. We're a much more technical and higher performing closure than a synthetic cork.
So you're a bit more expensive than the synthetic.
We're more expensive than a synthetic. We're also a bit more expensive than a screw cap.
Yeah.
Generally you find synthetics are around, again in Aussie dollar terms, sort of under 10 cents or around the 10 cent mark. You find screw caps are around the sort of the 13 to 14 cent mark. Zork sits above that, ranging between sort of just below 20 to just below 30. Obviously, it depends on your volumes. And you can buy a cork. Well, the technical corks or the twin tops tend to be around the 10 cent mark, 10 to 12 cent mark. And but you can buy a natural cork to 25 cents or even the really high quality ones, you know, 40 cents and above. And then, of course, with any of the cork products, you need to pay for a capsule to go over it. And they can vary between 3 and 15 cents, depending on the materials you use and how well they're decorated and so forth. So it's not always an easy shopping list when someone asks those questions.
Yeah, sure. But I suppose you've got no risk of any cork taint.
We have no risk of cork taint, no risk of scalping. If people don't know that term, that's when you... Sort of taint is when you put flavours into the wine. Scalping is when you absorb flavours out of the wine. Sure. Our product has been seriously tested.
What's the scalping, removing, stripping flavours out of the wine?
Actually, cork's pretty bad.
Yep.
It does both. It puts flavours in, it takes flavours out. But people are sort of so used to how cork affects flavours of wine, it becomes part of the wine in many ways.
I heard a study ages ago about Riesling. You get that oiliness and Riesling, and they compared Stelvins, plastic cork closures, and corks.
Yeah.
And the oiliness flavour was being stripped out quite heavily by the cork was the worst one, followed by the plastic closure, and then the Stelvin.
Yeah. Yes.
And I presume you'd be performing similarly to that.
No. Well, we use in many ways a similar material to a synthetic cork. A synthetic cork is a foamed block of plastic. It's like a big thick sponge. Lots of surface area and lots of material to absorb flavours and aromas. Zork is, as I said, has a similar material, but it has the end of the cork or end of the plunger is in contact with the wine, but it's only 1 millimetre thin, and it's a solid material, it's not foamed. So it won't absorb anywhere near the amount of aroma or flavours that a synthetic cork will, to a point where it's imperceptible, the difference that it makes. It's much more like a screw cap. We've had 2 years' worth of reports where the AWRI has done the sensory work on it, and we have never once had any question about absorbing flavours or aromas. We've actually done more detailed testing of that with GCMS testing and gas chromatograph analysis, and done all of that analysis. Right up in the early days, we tested a whole lot of materials, and of course we've picked the one that had, virtually zero effect on the wine at all.
What are your issues associated with the closure? What's stopping you guys becoming the market leaders?
Well, I said probably the hardest thing was a lot of people are waiting around to be second. Everybody wants to be first to be second. It's hard to find people that are ready to be first to be first. Mm-hmm. So people are waiting for somebody else to move. And generally everybody looks up to the next biggest guy. And so it's the people at the top. When they move, so many other people below them will say, right, if they've got confidence, I've got confidence, and we'll go. For the bigger producers, they want to test the closure for at least 2 years. We've only just completed our own testing for 2 years. And so the majors, particularly in Australia and the US, are just starting to get through their 2 years' worth of testing. I'm pretty confident that we're going to start seeing some brands from these customers on the shelf soon. And my feeling is that that will create this domino effect, and there'll be a lot of other people who follow that lead. So just waiting for the clock to tick has been a most frustrating one. But the second thing is perceptions of plastic. People think, look, it's all, it's another plastic stopper. They don't realise that inside, the bit you can't see is the foil that does all of the work. And so when we're at trade shows, we often cut them in half and give people half a Zork so they can see what's inside and see how it works. And it's that foil that really makes a Zork what a Zork is and does the work. So if anybody wants to cut one in half and have a look at it, go for it,
Well, thanks very much, John. It's been really interesting.
Pleasure, Chris.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with John. I quite liked how it does let some oxygen in, unlike screw caps at the moment. So you don't necessarily get the risk of those reductive sulfur characteristics that you can sometimes get in screw caps. Whilst personally, I don't care about the popping sound in a cork, and I like the convenience of being able to open a screw cap, I can see how some people might enjoy that. So, good on them for trying something new. And just because screw cap seems to be a fairly good closure doesn't mean that new innovation isn't going to come along in the near future and replace that. Next week, we're going to be talking to Mike Roberts from Ridgeview and getting an update on how the English harvest went this year. Ridgeview is one of the top sparkling wine producers, so it'll be quite interesting to catch up with Mike and see how the harvest went and find out a bit more about another one of England's top producers. So until then, cheers and good drinking. The UK Wine Show is brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news is read by Jane Scott. Background news research is by Sandra Clements. The music for the UK Wine Show is Griffiths de Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Giartelli and Silence by Italy North.